Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 1st of December. It is a new month and a new day, and we are here. We have a lot to talk about in a very short period of time. As you know, a case before the Supreme Court today that could bring the end of Roe versus Wade and reshape reproductive rights across the U.S. will be heard by the Supreme Court beginning this morning. We are going to go to live NPR coverage at 9:30 on that. So we have an abbreviated panel this morning. Let me quickly introduce everybody, and then we'll get started and talk about the few stories that we can get in for today. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm here.
Well, that's good. That's half the battle, isn't it?
I'm fine, therefore I'm here, or I'm here, therefore I'm fine.
That's, yes. Either way, good for us. Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security at the University at Albany, Bob Griffin, good morning.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, everybody.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you. I won't take up any more time. Thanks.
All right. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo with us. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
I'm good. I'm ready to talk fast so we can get a lot in.
Okay, good. All right, so let's get a lot in. So the Supreme Court will be hearing this today, and as I mentioned, this is the really deciding the fate of abortion rights all across the country. The case is Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization, and arguments are expected to be about 70 minutes, but could last up to 2 hours, and I'm just interested in going around. We have discussed this, obviously, on this program. So let me just go around the group and get from each of you what you'll be listening for and what you will find, what you're going to keep an ear out for as the justices ask questions and hear arguments today. Alan.
Well, I'm depressed by the whole thing, to be honest with you. The reputation of the court is now in the street. People understand that I've said it before, and I've gotten a certain amount of reaction from people who don't like my saying it, but they're a bunch of thugs. They've been appointed to do a political job, and they are doing that political job. If you listen carefully to them, this is not the old Supreme Court where, you know, there was a judicial conversation. These people were put on this court to behave the way that they're behaving. And so I don't know what else to tell you except that it's very depressing to me.
Rosemary Armeo.
Well, I believe that this court is going to overturn Roe v. Wade. I think they are going to try to make it look like they have not overturned it. They'll do it by saying, well, we're going to limit the right of states to regulate abortion. But it will, in effect, be killing Roe v. Wade. So what I'm going to listen for is what kind of arguments they're going to use to do that, how they will justify what I do agree with Alan they have already determined to do. At least three members of that court are on, we know, because they have specifically said Roe v. Wade was decided wrongly and that it should have gone a different way. So I think it's a foregone conclusion, but how they do it is always of interest. And the other thing I'm going to listen for is Sotomayor, who has become the voice of dissent. She's the new Ruth Bader Ginsburg. The difference is that she's not in a majority as Ruth Bader Ginsburg was. So her outrage, her anger at what's happening is eloquent to read about in her decisions, and I want to see if it comes out in the oral arguments that we'll be listening to.
Bob Griffin.
Yeah, I agree with Rosemary's position. What I'm really watching for is how the justices position themselves for a decision that I think is going to be contorting themselves in order to overturn Roe. And for me, it's not just Roe; it's what comes next. So if the court overturns precedent and completely throws us back into the 1950s, what's next, Joe? You know, is it the Griswold case that actually allowed contraception to be legal? What about the Loving case, Loving versus Virginia in 1967, that actually finally made it legal for interracial couples to marry. I mean, there's so many issues here, and I keep hearing the drumbeat from Mississippi, and it makes me sick about the Constitution, because they want to ignore the issues of the flaws in the Constitution, like the fact that that Black people were considered property and only 3/5 of a person, and have sort of created again this mirage that there is this perfect state of nature that we can return back to if only we ignore Roe. This today is the day that could set us could set the country's civil rights back by decades, if not longer.
And correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, we'll have an inkling of how things go, but obviously the decision will not come out till much later, till next year. So we won't know for sure, but we'll at least have some inkling of what was discussed. I know we try to read these tea leaves on every case.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, it's going to be it's going to be a 5-4 vote, and Thomas is going to. I'd be surprised if Thomas writes the opinion, but I mean, he's going to probably be in the position to determine who is the lead jurist on this for the majority. So yeah, you're right. It's going to take a while, and they're going to try to put a veneer of law and civil liberties around the case when this is just a deeply personal and religious position that they're taking. The other thing that I'll toss on the table, and I'd love to hear from folks too, is at what point in time do we start to talk about reworking the numbers of the court.
Rosemary, your thoughts on that?
I think that Democrats are not in a position. They can talk about it, but nothing's going to happen. They don't have the power. I don't think they have the power anywhere with the electorate, much less in Congress, to making changes in the Supreme Court. That's down the road. I think where you're going to see changes is in civil society. Planned Parenthood and national abortion rights are collecting money and volunteers. I myself will be on the front lines when this comes about. There have been predictions that society will be ripped apart if they dump Roe v. Wade to get rid of 50 years of jurisprudence. So I think Roberts is going to do anything he can to write the decision. He definitely does not want Clarence Thomas writing this decision. So he's pivotal to this. He is against abortion, but also wants the court respect it and does not want precedent thrown out, which this very much would do. This is a court completely willing to throw away precedent. We've seen it with voting rights already. We've seen it with gerrymandering. We've seen it with a lot of things. They can throw out the precedent. So Roberts is going to want to keep control, which means there's going to be tons of maneuvering behind the scene after these oral arguments are over. I don't think there's going to be a lot of surprises today. We know mostly where everyone stands, don't we, on this issue. They've certainly been asked about it enough. But how they're going to maneuver this to get what they want, which is the end of abortion, without throwing the country into disarray, is going to be all behind the scenes in the next few months. Fascinating stuff.
Alan,
and I don't see much hope in Roe v. Wade. Sorry, that's all.
No. Go ahead, Alan.
You know, as long it's an interesting point you make about Roberts writing the decision. If Roberts votes with the minority here, which I think he will, or he may well, he doesn't get to write the decision. That
right.
Falls then to the senior judge in the group that is for the change. So you're right. He's the moderating force, and has been, and he understands that the Supreme Court is fallen into hard times. It has very little public support. We have seen the polls on that compared to even a year ago or 2 years ago. But I think Roberts finds himself in a very bad position.
Yeah, Alan, and you're right. Although I do think he's going to be in the minority vote. I think it's going
to
be interesting because of the seniority system in the Supreme Court. Whoever's the senior justice on the on the winning side determines who will write the opinion.
That's why
it's going to be really interesting to see if Clarence Thomas does it. I almost doubt. Although I don't know if Amy Coney Barrett has the seniority to write, because
she doesn't.
some esoteric ways that they determine things.
Rosemary?
That's exactly why I don't think you can say that Roberts is going to vote in the minority, because he is aware of all the dynamics that you're talking about. He does not want Clarence Thomas, who's one of the most radical conservatives, to be writing it. That would be even more incendiary. So I think that he's going to be the lead of negotiations for a very extremely narrow decision that he can pull people on. He can become the majority so that he will write it. And it's going to look like a technical response to the Mississippi law. But in effect, if it goes along with that law at all, it is totally gutting Roe v. Wade. And I think that's what's in store for us. I don't think they're going to come out with a Clarence Thomas statement saying it's really great that finally after 50 years we're rid of this awful decision. I do not think you're going to see that.
Alan, you're going to say?
I think you make a point. It would not be the first time that somebody who intuitively wants to go with the minority goes with the majority in order to influence the majority opinion. And you're right. Clarence Thomas has been around for a long time, which I believe makes him senior in assigning this opinion. Yeah, I may be wrong on that.
No, he is he would be the senior justice on the majority. It's also interesting, you know, I listened to the officials from Mississippi crow about this case, and I think listening to them talk about how science has, you know, they're using science as part of their decision, and these are the same people that are ignoring the scientists when it comes to COVID and vaccines, and this hypocrisy of cherry picking when and where is really starting to get to be a bit much, isn't it?
Rankle.
That's a perfect word. Thank you.
Yes. All right. We are expecting.
Go ahead. I said one other thing.
Absolutely.
Clarence Thomas would get to decide who writes the decision in the majority, gutting Wade, but that doesn't mean he would pick himself. He could very well pick Amy Coney Barrett to write it, because then you have a woman gutting abortion. They would like that.
Yeah, and I thought about that, but I just don't know if she's senior enough for it. And again, that's where the some of the esoteric rules that I don't really understand, but what goes on behind the curtain.
So we are going to be going over to live coverage at 9:30 with NPR, and we'll be hearing the arguments of the case that we are talking about this morning. That leaves us with a few minutes. I want to try to get in another subject or two. Real quick, the breaking news, which, Alan, I want to check in with you on, that Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker, the Republican who maintained the enduring support of his blue state constituents through the boom times, the Trump presidency, and in the face of mass death during the COVID-19 pandemic, is saying he will not seek a third term. How big a deal is that?
Well, I think it's a big deal because an awful lot of people like him and voted for him, and I was one of them. But I have to say, there aren't a lot of people who the blue state Massachusetts would go for the way that they have gone for Baker. So I think it's a big deal. I thought the moment he said he wasn't going to tell earlier was an indicator that he wasn't going to do it.
Yeah.
And I think it's too bad for the people of Massachusetts, because now the Democrats are going to get some horses in the race. Clearly, they were going to lose otherwise.
Anybody else on that?
I have enormous respect for Governor Baker. I thought he did an amazing job in Massachusetts and showed that you can vote across the parties and still get decent leadership. He's one of the few.
Rosemary?
And by the way, in Massachusetts, they often do that.
Yeah.
In other words, it's as blue a state as you can find with Democrats. But I think the Democrats every once in a while get up on their hind legs and say, you know, we're not going to let you just do anything you want, put anybody up you want. We have to have quality candidates. And they have on several occasions elected Republicans.
Rosemary?
Well, I know that Baker has a great reputation, but I think the fewer Republicans in high office, the better these days. So I'm glad he's not running again. Moderate and decent Republicans have no voice in their party anymore. So he's less and less effective. I hope the Democrats take this seriously and put in a strong inspiring leader in that state. That would be great.
All right. Finally, on the subject that we'll talk about today before we go over to NPR coverage in just 3 or 4 minutes, CNN has suspended Chris Cuomo after new details on help he gave to his brother. I will admit, both Alan and I were saying yesterday that we would be very surprised if the network did anything. It is important to note they really haven't done anything yet as far as getting rid of him, but they have suspended him indefinitely, which I don't know. If I'm reading it, Alan, it seems like they're just trying to find a graceful exit, if there is such a thing possible.
Well, the key word in their decision to get rid of him is indefinitely.
Yes.
You know, suspension is one thing, but when you say indefinitely, it has a sort of forever ring to it, as in you're fired. I think that they realized that something was up. Now, what we don't know, maybe Rosemary knows, maybe Bob knows, we don't know what was in the tapes that they have of Chris Cuomo or the remarks of Chris Cuomo that made them say, "Uh-oh, we've got to get rid of him here because otherwise,
well, I think
we're going to look like."
Yeah, I think we do know that. I mean, I think it's what was released by Tish James, right, Rosemary? I mean, it was what was released.
Yeah, we know now.
And they're saying, and what CNN is saying is that this isn't what you told us. You didn't tell us. You said you helped, but it was on a very superficial basis. Mm-hmm. And now, obviously, mm-hmm. this was much more than you let on to believe, right? Is that
really,
was my
it
reason.
Yeah, yes.
We talked yesterday, and you guys were saying, oh, there's nothing new here. I read it, and I said, this is not what he told him. He lied. He said, I wouldn't do opposition research for my brother. He did. He used his position at CNN to find out what Ronan
Farrow.
Merrow was writing about. I think it went the tapes and the information that James released. She also has a conflict of interest problem. Certainly he deserves firing or worse. And as for indefinite, Jeffrey Toobin, let me bring him back to mind. He was let go too, and now he's back on. Maybe Chris Cuomo will stay out a little bit longer.
Well, okay, I think the wording was different for, they said they were going to let him take a break, a much needed break or something. I don't think it was, we're going to look into this matter and investigate further. I mean, I think they knew what they were dealing with Toobin. I mean, you're right. He came back after a time after he did just, his penance. But this seems
Yeah, just
a
took him
bit
six weird. Months to find his pants, right, Joe?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it can be hell zipping up your fly when you're that age. But go ahead, Bob.
No, I think I agree with the comment that was just made by Rosemary that, you know, I think Tish James does have a conflict of interest in this, and it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. The other thing that it points to me is that the fallout from the Cuomo administration isn't passed yet, and I think that is should be particularly worrying for a lot of people that were very close to him that are still in the administration.
You know, Bob and Rosemary, that's an interesting point about the conflict of interest, because let's not forget who the attorney general was, who was all after Spitzer and who succeeded him. And that was Andrew Cuomo. So that certainly is a different, is consistent. So I don't know why all of a sudden Tish James is being held responsible for political ambition.
We only have about 15 seconds, but go ahead.
Bob, that's why.
Because what?
She's delivering mortal blows to the Cuomos. That's who she's competing with for the job. That's why it's a...
Well, but the same thing was true, Rosemary. The same thing was true with Andrew when he was going after Spitzer.
Well, you'll have to tune in tomorrow and we'll talk much more. I'm sorry, Rosemary. We got to go. We got to go. I already missed my first out, so now I got to take my second. My thanks will be, we're going to be going over to NPR coverage. It's proof to all of you of why we need more time, and that's great. We'll do it tomorrow. We'll get everything in, I promise.